So in case you were wondering, yes, this is a different gospel from the one in the Missalette. This is the one that is proper to the first martyrs of the Church of Rome. Because we sometimes forget that the gospels were written in a very specific period in time. They weren't written immediately after the proclamation of Christ. Most of the disciples thought that Jesus was going to come back in bodily form within a few years of his ascension. And then that didn't happen. It took them a while, and then they relied on the witness of the apostles to get them by. So they would attend Mass like this, and the apostles would speak. There was no gospel reading in the first Masses. The gospel reading was when the apostle would speak from his chair and tell the church about what they had seen and heard. I mentioned yesterday from the Feast of Peter and Paul that that's exactly how the church was founded. The witness of the apostles, what they had experienced, what they had touched. In fact, the very beginning of John's letter is, "We proclaim to you what we have seen, heard, tasted, touched, felt, seen with our own eyes, the witness to life." He goes on basically saying, our own personal experience is the foundation of this faith. And if you have fellowship with us, you have fellowship with God. That's right out of the first letter of St. John. And so what the church is this fellowship with those first witnesses. And the breaking of the bread, this Eucharistic celebration, was not just a Sunday obligation. It was a Sunday obligation. They called it the first day of the week, the Lord's Day. But it was so fundamental that they shared this fellowship, that they risked so much for it. So in the first few centuries, in the first few decades, sorry, for this is the Catholic temptation is to think too much in centuries. Right now, we're only thinking in decades. Jesus rises from the dead roughly mid-30s. And then for a good period right after that, it's seen entirely by the outside world as a fight among Jews. Almost entirely. And depending on how it developed in region by region, then the church had either a distinctively Greek or a distinctively Jewish feel, depending on what city you were in. So Ephesus was a really Greek city, and the Christian church there was much more Greek than in some other places. The city of Rome, however, was a Jerusalem mission. So apostles and missionaries left from Jerusalem somehow. We don't know how it happened, but the Roman church was a result of, because there's a huge population of Jews in Rome, a very large population of Jews in Rome. They would often get kicked out of the city back and forth. But then when Christianity got to Rome, the Christian church there was much more Jewish than many other of the Christian churches, especially the ones preached to by the Apostle Paul. And in fact, it had a particular structure which we even still see today. The College of Cardinals. There was a group of presbyters who were very close to the bishop figure, but he was more of the leader of a Sanhedrin, a leader of a council. But all of these guys would gather and consult with each other, and they would elect from their own member who would in fact be their head or their visible head. So after Peter and Paul are martyred in the very period of the mid-60s, under Emperor Nero, then that's when the structure of the Roman Church really took on its flavor, really took on its style. But the one thing that's going on today is the other persecutions that went around when it comes under the time of Emperor Nero. See, Nero was a nasty figure, and everybody knew it. A real nasty piece of work. In fact, he was so nasty that when Bugs Bunny portrayed him, he was played by Yosemite Sam. Just giving you a glimpse. In my favorite image of this was when I was a little boy and watching those cartoons, and they're always looking for more victims that they would be able to send to the lions. But Emperor Nero was a nasty, nasty figure, leader of an empire, and he wanted to keep it all together, but yet he also had this tremendous ego problem. And so there's this record of, and this is not a Christian record, this is a Roman record from the historian Tacitus that Nero had this. The rumor was that Nero himself burned Rome. There was a massive fire in the middle of the 60s, a massive fire that all of a sudden they needed to explain away. And God forbid it be the emperor's fault. God forbid that the emperor show any kind of concern for his people. And the classic image is him playing the fiddle as Rome burned. So, of course, they needed a scapegoat. It wasn't going to quite do politically to blame the Jews. They've had their fights, and they're trying to kind of get along. You don't want to blame the aristocracy. You don't want to blame the Senate. You definitely don't want to blame the emperor. So what are you going to do? Well, there's this group of people that meets in secret. They have some doctrines that nobody seems to be able to get because, of course, the Christians wouldn't tell anybody what they believed. They kept themselves secret. They wouldn't share with the outside world what their sacraments were. And so there was this level of mistrust. So the natural target was blame the Christians. So almost overnight, Christians are gathered together and killed in some of the most brutal manners. Thrown into the arena, eaten alive, and one of the most horrifying images is they're laid up on spikes along the Appian Way and burned alive. And it's even worse because the Christians were a secretive community at this point. So how do you think Rome figured out who was a Christian? Exactly what Jesus says in today's gospel. Christians turned in other Christians. This is the period in which our gospels are written. Most especially the gospel according to St. Mark. But all of the gospels are written either during or after this period, where in the Roman church, Christians are turning Christians in because of either political hatreds, family hatreds, or they don't like each other just as people don't like each other in the church, and they figure, what's the best way of getting rid of them? Well, I'll hand them over to the state and I'll be a good citizen. And the scandal rocked the Christian church horribly. And they said, how are we going to get past this? And then they remembered the cross. They remembered that at no point in the Jewish and the Christian tradition that you can expect the world to like you or trust you. In fact, even in the first reading today from the prophet Amos, this comes from the northern kingdom, not the kingdom of Israel in the south, but the kingdom of Israel in the north. I talked about it, I think, this past Sunday, where the kingdom of Israel was split in two, and the kingdom of Judah was in the south, and the kingdom of Israel was in the north. And he warns them that the Assyrians are coming, and because you were unfaithful, your kingdom will be destroyed. And now very often we as Christians might think that this is a horrible thing that would happen to us, and why would God allow such a thing? Well, on one level, God does not like it. He does not like it at all. But there's also a time and a way in which we can see in which Christians get too big for their britches. Where we expand too much. We have so much going on for us that we forget that what God really wants from us is this intimate fellowship. And that the only way we know that our relationship with Him is truly at the depths that is required is that we know that His love is better than life. That doing the law of the Lord, as the psalm would describe, is better than prosperity. That following God's law does bring prosperity, but it is better to be poor and be blessed than it is to be wretched and rich. And the proof of the pudding there is in the eating. Anybody can say that kind of stuff, but it's so hard to truly put it into practice. And this is why we can sometimes see flagrant floutings of what Jesus actually says. This morning, I watched on YouTube, it popped up on my little Facebook page, where this guy was prophesying that the end of the world would be June 29th, 2016. Oops. And the funny thing was, is that he was proclaiming this because he was saying, there'll be many false teachers telling you that this is not going to be happening, but I've plumbed the scriptures and I've known the truth. This has happened so many times. And what does Jesus even say today? People will come to you talking about doom and gloom and the end of the world. These things are going to happen. When we watch Western civilization gradually crumble, when we watch our religious institutions gradually fall apart, when we watch our Christian church being torn apart by people that seem to be more interested in their place in the church than their fidelity to Christ, it is really easy to lose faith. It is really easy. Which is why, if any of you are over the age of 60 or 70, you've seen what has happened. Maybe what God is doing right now is some pruning. Maybe we got too big for our britches. Maybe we got too comfortable in mere religiosity and didn't realize that fidelity to Christ is more important than life itself. Because He is life itself. No matter what you're going to do, you're going to die. No matter what you're going to do, you're going to be alone before the living God. He already loves you. So it's so much better to go with Him with confidence and courage. Yes, of course, the world is going to slander you. Yes, of course, everyone's going to say you're a nasty human being. And of course, the propaganda machine in our modern world is really quite capable of trying to convince people that that is the case. But I think if there's one thing that we Christians today can do, which I don't think we're doing enough, is that rather than responding to propaganda with more propaganda and activism with more activism, let's actually do what Jesus commanded us. Let's really take care of the sick. Let's really wash the feet of the poor. Let's really take care of our most vulnerable members. For if you keep wondering why the Christian church was able to attract so many people, it was not because of the clarity of the doctrine. They hadn't figured out a lot of the details yet. The Bible had not yet been written, or the parts of the New Testament had not yet been written. Many of the Christian communities were so secretive that they would never even have seen a Eucharist or a baptism until years after their first encounter with Christians. The pagan world was initially attracted by the Christian church by this one phrase, "See how much they love each other."